Welcome to the Work is Weird Now podcast. Whether you're nearing retirement, entering the workforce for the first time, or caught somewhere in the confusing muddle in the middle, you're likely sensing it and you're probably living it. We know we are, and we want to know why. Listen in as we interview experts and everyday people like you to find out how best to navigate the ever-growing weirdness of work in the modern age. Welcome to Work is Weird Now. Today we've got Lucy standing with us. Lucy is a chartered occupational psychologist and co-founder of Brave Starts, which is a UK-based nonprofit focused on supporting mid and later career professionals, especially those aged 45 to 65, to navigate career transitions with confidence and purpose. So welcome, Lucy. Nice to have you here.
It's brilliant to be here. Thank you very much both for having me.
So Lucy, it'd be great if you just introduced yourself a little bit too and told us a little bit more about Brave Starts and maybe how it came to be. And then we'll dive into our big question for today, which is, am I too old for today's workplace?
Brilliant. So yes, I mean, you've done a beautiful introduction. I am a psychologist. I have always been a psychologist. So unlike a lot of people who've done complete career changes, I started off pretty much since my master's in the world of psychology. For about 10 years, I was vice chair of the Association for Business Psychology, which is a professional body helping to steer, guide, and champion the profession. And it was during that role, setting up conferences, running training programs, that I really understood and saw that we've got this enormous aging population issue. And yet most of the research in psychology and a lot of the research in human resource management tended to look more at things like leadership, recruitment, development, diversity. But there's this whole missing piece around the kind of the 45, 55 plus space, which is really actually under-researched. It's not completely understood. And given that this is a problem affecting 100% of people and businesses, because 100% of people, God willing, will age, it seemed to me to be the area where I could make the biggest impact by working in this space.
It's interesting because anecdotally, I hear stories like this all the time, right? I'm in the lower end of the 45 to 65 age bracket. And I hear these stories all the time. You know, people are really worried, maybe for the first time in that I'm aware of, at least, about losing their jobs at 49 years old because they're concerned they're not going to be able to get back into the workplace or they're not going to be able to find a job. And so, and then the stats kind of bear that out too, right? So a third of over 50s job seekers in the UK say they're worried about age discrimination. Age discrimination payouts jumped 600% in 2024, which clearly indicates that there's a problem. So when we go to the question of, am I too old for today's workplace, what kind of context are we looking at that you think makes people answer yes to that question, or they have the feeling that the answer to that question is yes?
So the context is a context that's always been designed for a three-stage life, i.e. you do your education, you then go into the world of work, probably at the ages between 16 to say 21. You then work. That's your second stage after education. So work for about 40, 45 years, and then you retire. And so that's been the sort of the context that organizations tend to operate within. And that context is no longer fit for purpose, because the reality is the amount of time that people spend in a job is on the decline. So you used to do a job for life. Obviously now people are changing around, having to make career changes. The longer that people are living requires that we adapt, that we change. It was all right when we were dying at 38. Maybe you could always sort of work in a field. But now if you're living until the age of 100 and still working at 80, which is increasingly going to be the likelihood for everybody, then actually just doing one job no longer makes sense. And yet, if you look at the landscape of organizations across specifically the UK, so I'm not talking more globally here, we know that very few organizations are considering, planning for, or preparing for this aging workforce. The CIPD, for example, in 2022, November, so not that long ago, they did a survey of more than 2,000 organizations, and only 13% of them were planning and thinking about preparing for an aging workforce. That doesn't mean they're doing anything. Ask them follow-up questions about, have you got budget to look at this? And the answers are no. So more than 80% of organizations are doing absolutely nothing at all, not even thinking about it. So that's the backdrop that people are operating in, the context that people are operating in. So it's not therefore that surprising that we see huge amounts and huge levels of ageism. Not many people admit to it, but give them the veil of anonymity, and actually we see that about 55% of people will be screened out the older they get from applications.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that fear is not unfounded, basically. You know, what people are feeling is actually happening in real life. So when people come to you at Brave Starts, what are they seeking from you? What do they want to get from that experience? What skills do they feel they're missing? Or what kind of mindset shift do you think they need?
Well, the main thing that they want is they want a job, primarily. Now, I'm like, no. We are not a recruiter. We are not mm-hmm. someone who can land you a job. However, what I would say to most people is their biggest barrier most of the time is probably that they're pricing themselves out of the market, or that they see themselves as too senior, or that their status is something they're not prepared to compromise on. The reality is there are hundreds of jobs out there. There are not hundreds of jobs out there that everyone is prepared to do. And so that is one of the biggest barriers that people themselves limit themselves within. I also get people will say things like, yeah, I don't want to work in the sorts of sectors that may be growing. Let's look at, for example, care sector, right? With an aging demographic, you're going to get more people who need care, retirement villages, products that look at serving the needs of an older group or an older population. A lot of people will turn around and go, maybe that's not the sexiest sector. Maybe that's not really the field I want to work on. And you think, yes, I understand. However, the market pays people for jobs that they don't want to do. Nobody pays you to do the job that you think, you know, that too many interior designers, too many people want to become life coaches. There aren't enough people fixing things like satellite TV cable channels or Wi-Fi networks or broadband, goodness knows what, or quite frankly, the kind of the care home jobs. So there is a bit of a disconnect around that. So we do spend a lot of time at Brave Starts helping people try and understand where the opportunities are, what they're going to have to do to get there, some of the shifts they're going to make. And because that's quite an uncomfortable process for people, what they tell us they appreciate and like most is the experience of working alongside other people who are like them and finding out that, number one, they're not alone. Two, all of their feelings that you've expressed, Alice, you know, this is a problem. We can validate those 100%. Ageism is rife. It's absolutely rife. So knowing that this is not personal to them, seeing other people making shifts and changes is quite inspirational. But getting clearer on what it is that they're going to have to do next is ultimately the place that we're trying to get them to. Because when people are clearer, actions line up. When people are unclear, they're all over the place, doing a bit here, a bit there, scattergun, applying for everything and getting nowhere. When you're clear on what it is that you want to do, you network with the right people, you're building your knowledge, your skills, your content, you're working on work experience, you're volunteering in the right skill gaps, you're looking to fill the sort of things that you need to fill in order to become more employable in the place that you want to go.
What are some of the real actionable things that you're doing? So you've mentioned some things there. Volunteering sounds like an amazing one to go and almost, I was going to say, are there skills gap that you're seeing that are very specific to this age group? Is there anything really stand out? And also anything like CV refinement? You know, we know with the easy apply button on LinkedIn, right? People could just fling in a CV and it must be overwhelming. How having to refine CVs for dedicated jobs every single time must be really difficult when you've got so much more experience. Is that a challenge that you're finding too?
Let's pick up on that last point that you've said, because then I think that will start to address the skills gap point. So the last one that you were asking about was this CV refinement. Is it exhausting and so on and so forth? And our response to that would probably be more along the lines of, if you are tweaking a CV and applying for a job, the reality is, if you're in this age demographic, you're probably already too late. So the whole concept of once a job is advertised is a broken concept, because people are recruiting for experience. They're not recruiting for potential. So once a job is advertised, you're going to see hundreds of applications go into that job. The recruiter is going to be overwhelmed. They're going to outsource that job to a company outside of them. There's no requirements for those organizations to actually track age, which is why the ageism kicks in. And that's what we're seeing. So by the time a job is actually advertised, it's probably already too late. So therefore, in order to address this, how do you refine the CV? Let's understand that this recruitment process as it currently stands is broken. And how do you get around that? How do you position yourself in a market where you're not waiting for the job to be advertised? Let's say there's a cybersecurity business, it's down the road. I've got the skills around that sort of a sector. This organization has no idea that I exist. My first thing is to start thinking, well, who are the people that work in that organization? Where am I going to meet those people? What are the problems that that organization is addressing? If those are the problems that organization is addressing for people, how do I prove I'm already working on those problems, that I understand their customer, their consumer, their issues? How do I also then make sure that I'm competitive? So do I know what they're paying people to do those sorts of jobs at the moment? Now, once you're armed with all that sort of information and you start communicating that you understand the issues, the problems, once you start communicating that you understand the ceiling level and that you are not asking for salary or money over and above what they're looking for, once you then start to understand that actually the person who might be hiring you is very likely to be younger than you and likely to be scared and concerned about the skills that you're bringing and what you might show up in them in terms of them not being able to demonstrate all of those things, then actually you can start to articulate that. How do I make this person understand I'm an ally and not a competitor? So the sorts of things that you can arm yourself with to sort of say to people, this is how I can help. There may be times where I know more than you. What I'll do is I'll pull you into a room. I'll explain it carefully. I'll do it in a way that's helpful and constructive. I guarantee I'm not here to undermine you. You know, some of those sorts of things are going to be what people are going to need to do in order to circumnavigate the place where by the time a job is already advertised, it's probably already too late. You need to be building those networks, developing those communications, building those relationships before jobs get advertised.
That's great. I mean, could we put together like a mini list? What few myths could we debunk about people in this age category that younger hiring managers are going to have fear of? You know, because that's going to be a really lovely way for both sides to overcome it.
So the top myth, but it's not entirely unjustified, because I promise you there are people in this demographic who are at that level of saying, I will only do a job if it's over 250,000 a year. And I'll be looking at them going, yeah, great. How's that working out for you? Saying that, the myth, I would say once people have gone through our program, they do understand there is a ceiling of these jobs. A ceiling salary level for most organizations. You cannot justify to any shareholder or any organization director, any charity director, right? Any trustee, that you should be paying 100 grand for someone who's a bit older versus less for someone who's a bit younger. Unless those skill sets are so demonstrably different, unless the money they're bringing in, unless the problems they're solving are so different, you can't justify that increase, right? So The biggest myth is that as people get older, they expect higher salary. Most people, as they get older, are willing to take salary cuts. Money becomes much less important for the key reason that actually as people get older, the generalization I'm comfortable making is that you've probably made more money than someone in their 20s. Therefore, you're more likely to have paid off things like a mortgage. You're more likely to be a bit more established, even if you're not rolling in cash. You have at least got adjusted to the fact that maybe you have a beautiful two up, two down cottage. It's not worth huge amounts of cash, but you're comfortable. You don't necessarily need or want your lifestyle to change drastically from a financial perspective. So money, out of seven different drivers, is the sixth most important on the list. Whereas for younger people, that's a lot higher because their acquisition needs haven't been met to anywhere near the same degree. So the first thing that people need to understand is that older people, generally speaking, are much more flexible around what kind of income they will earn. The second thing that I think is worth understanding is that the myth is that as people get older, they can't learn new tricks, right? They're a bit stuck in their ways. They're not going to be IT savvy. If I had a penny for any time somebody said to me, oh,
older people can do reverse mentoring by learning from younger people about IT skills, right? I mean, it's ridiculous. Older people are proven time and time again that they are able, in a work performance context, able to pick up and learn whatever skills they need for pretty much any job. The reason this myth comes about is because when you look at things like cognitive reasoning tests and things that are assessing something called fluid intelligence, you will perform at your peak when you're about 19. Right? You now translate that to the world of work. And actually, most people aren't doing fluid intelligence tests under timed conditions in a short space of time, right? That skill set is not what's relevant. Most of the time, what's relevant in the world of work is empathy, understanding, patience, ability to talk to client, build a relationship with a patient, earn the trust from delivering, being reliable, coming back time and time again, questioning, not overreacting emotionally to challenges and chaos, and so on and so forth. So job performance and age has a positive relationship, i.e. the older you get, the better you get, to a point that starts to level out at about 45. So you don't start to see any particular developmental increase over and above that point. But yeah, as you get older, you are going to get better. And that's what I do tell most of our members as they come through. Your peak is 45 plus. So if you haven't reached that yet, keep going. The other thing that I think is a good myth that's probably worth busting is that as people get older, they are more infirm, you know, they're going to need more time off for caring responsibilities and so on and so forth. The reality is that, again, as people get older, they do need more flexibility, but they are, whatever it is that they say they're going to commit to, they'll commit to. So from the point of view of being reliable, turning up, delivering, you're going to get that from the older worker. So as I say, any of the things that tend to put people off, they're more expensive, they can't learn new things. You know, that's just not true. Actually, you're better off going to this audience because they've been so underserved. They've been so unwanted for so long.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
Make an offer to someone in their 50s, they're going to bite your hand off probably.
I love that. Thank you for that. That's such an accessible list. Thank you.
Yeah. I think some of the things that you're talking about, and I think you mentioned at one point that you're writing a book, some of the things that you're talking about sort of challenge the fundamental idea of what work is, right? So if work is not the thing that allows us to live because it puts money in the bank primarily, then what is it, you know, and what does it become for people in this age group who are maybe not so reliant on the salary? How do we need to shift that mindset? And what is the potential new mindset towards work for this generation?
The evidence on this is quite clear. As you say, I have been writing a book on this, and I had to be kind of reined in slightly. I'm writing it with this brilliant professor called Martin Hyde, and he did correct me because I wanted to call chapter 2 Retirement Kills. And he was saying, well, can't go quite that strong on it. What we can say, and what the evidence is very clear about, is that people who feel and have a sense of purpose, which is most often linked to the world of work, right? It could be that your purpose is you're doing a hobby. It could be that your purpose is you're volunteering. But work in some capacity, meeting the needs and supporting the needs of other people, is the broadest definition we have of work. And people who continue to work score better on pretty much every marker of successful aging. So it could be better cognitive health, better physical health, better lifetime satisfaction. These are all pretty important metrics. And I would imagine most people want to maintain that throughout all of their lives. So this idea that we should retire at 65 it's ridiculous, quite frankly. It is a social construct. It has never, you know, if we think about it, retirement didn't exist in the UK prior to about 1948, was when it was mass introduced. There are a couple of fields like military, where it was introduced a little bit earlier. But prior to that, we didn't evolve to retire, right? We've always evolved to build connections, to make a contribution, to have a place, whether it's in a tribe, in a society, in a community, where we help other people and we have meaningful connection, where we're looking after each other. We're almost in a society now where people are saying, right, once you're 65, your place of being important and making a contribution to society is no longer needed. And that's not entirely right. It should be that actually you're always needed. You can always make a contribution because you can. And the people who do are happier, healthier, and physically fitter.
Yeah. Are you seeing a lot more kind of portfolio style careers out of this age group as well? For some of the reasons you're detailing, that actually people aren't necessarily looking for a kind of 9-to-5 all-encompassing career at this point, but are actually looking at ways to explore things that they're curious about, or to make connections in different ways to different aspects of their life.
I mean, it's the market is moving that way anyway. So I would love to say to you, I mean, it is driven very much by, as you get older, very few people are prepared to work full time. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily I don't want to work hard. It's really not that. It's that I have worked hard for 30, 40 years. I actually genuinely need some time now, whether it's grandchildren, whether it's caring, whether it's physical exercise, whether it's don't need to prove myself anymore. So that and the need to earn money is just not such a high focus. So hence the other needs start to take more and more priority. That aside, there are things genuinely happening in the marketplace, whether it's rising national insurance, whether it's increases in innovation, whether it's the huge shift that AI is going to be making to the workplace. I mean, we are already seeing, if we look at the US in 2022, 27% of people worked freelance, fractional. That rose to 38% just 2 years later. That's going to be more than 50% by 2030, more than 50% of the population.
I've got a recent start on this because I had a chat with a recruiter who was on season one. So in 2020, there were 2,000 people with fractional on their LinkedIn title, and now there's 180,000 just for, you know, 5 years later. So the yes. rise of that is absolutely there. And I can imagine that is a lot more appealing for this demographic for sure. And I think just that flexibility, and also the flexibility for businesses. A lot of people now that I'm hearing in corporates are seeing the benefits of having a diverse supply chain of people with more experience, and almost piecing them together for an elevated experience too. I think it's slow to be adapted, but the people that you speak to who are doing it are actually seeing the benefits of it.
It's increasingly common. It's going to continue in that way, because it does meet most people's needs. I'm not going to say it's right for every single job. You know, I mean, I do understand there are certain jobs you work in hospital sector, you know, in an emergency room that has to be staffed 24/7. But does it have to be staffed by people doing it 5 days a week? You know, there's a strong argument to say, no, absolutely not. You know, when HR systems are designed around the needs of people and not around the needs of headcount and IT systems and what works, then actually I think possibilities are far more exciting. I used to run a bit on the side. Everyone has a side hustle now, right? About 43% of people in England have a side hustle. But I did, I ran a hotel business with my brother on the side while I was working in consultancy. And it was so much easier trying to get a shift covered when we had a wider pool of people than if you just have six people and goes off on sick. Well, you haven't got anyone else to go to. I mean, there are challenges with it. I'm not going to lie. You know, if people have got that mortgage that they have to cover every single month, you want some sort of stability, you know. And this lifestyle of constantly pitching and finding work and being agile and having to adapt and so on and so forth, it's exhausting. It's not going to be for everyone.
That takes me back to Brave Starts. So it's interesting that it's called Brave Starts and not Brave Ends, by the way, just a thought. What are the most commonly pursued courses or information that you're providing by the people who join?
Well, the most common job or sector or role that people are looking to move into is environment, sustainability, something to do with the planet. So that's kind of top of the list of what people are aspiring towards. Second on the list is anything to do with kind of human well-being and human welfare. So things like could be the counselling, psychotherapy, wanting to become a coach, wanting to help other people, looking very much in that kind of charity sector as well, sort of helping roles, younger people, mental health, reforming people who are coming out of prisons and things. So a lot of focus on that area. Third is creative. So a lot of people are saying that they want to kind of move into more creative roles, but it's unclear what that's going to look like. So whether it's more writing books, writing more articles, who knows, but creativity is kind of the capsule that it falls under. So those are the top three that people come to us saying that they want. That's not what they end up doing half the time. Mm. The data I have on what people end up doing is unclear, because we don't necessarily say, where do you end up? Mm. But we do ask, how much clearer are you now on where it is that you're going? So, you know, a lot of our program is about trying to get people to get more clarity on whether or not the roles that they have in their mind are going to be realistic aspirations for them or not. So let's say somebody comes to us saying, yeah, I want to become a phlebotomist, right? We would say, well, number one, here's someone in our community who is a phlebotomist. Go and talk to them. Ask them about their role. Be clear on the sorts of questions. What does a week look like? What do the skills look like? If a job comes up, how many people are applying for it? What are the skills that they absolutely must have? Those sorts of questions, so that they've got a bit more clarity on, well, do I want to retrain for 2 years? Am I prepared to go into a role that's going to be up against 200 applicants every time? Once you've got more data, you make a better, more informed decision about whether or not that's right for you. So everything we're doing is about gather more data, the best data you can get. So it starts with a conversation. So let's say somebody has that conversation with a phlebotomist and they go, yes, I love the sound of everything you're saying. I can cope with all of my anxieties about all of these areas have been addressed. The next step we would say to them is, now you have to spend some time actually doing it, because what you think in your head is often not what you experience in reality, right? If that was the case, we'd all marry people that we like the look of on an online dating platform, or we would all be wonderfully happy with a job based purely on its job description. But we know that that's not how things pan out. So go and do some form of experience. And the easiest way of doing experience is to volunteer. If it's something like phlebotomy, where you're not allowed to volunteer and poke people in the wrong place without, you know, well, actually shadow someone who does it, because actually a lot of the time what you're hearing in terms of anxieties, what you're seeing in terms of people fainting, what you're experiencing with people shouting at you because they've been waiting for 20 minutes, you know, these will be the sorts of markers that tell you whether or not that's something you actually want to do or not. And fine, maybe you're not going to actually inject somebody, but maybe you could try drawing some juice out of an actual orange, which is, you know, usually used as a good simulator for poking somebody in a leg or poking somebody in the arm. So those would be the sorts of things. So if people have had conversations with people, actually done something to build some experience, and if after all of that they go, yeah, you know what, this is for me, then our job is done.
Well, that prior point of just challenging your impression of work too. You know, I also have people saying, I'm 55, I'm in a job that I don't love, it pays me well, I'm thinking about quitting. And it's like, you know, you don't want to say to somebody, don't quit, because there's not that many jobs out there for people who are 55. But on the other hand, it's like, if you reframe what that job is doing for you, is it actually allowing you to do the things that are more important in your life? Is it providing you with that connection day to day? Do you like your team? And that actually is valuable in and of itself. So I think even just changing what you need from work at this stage mm-hmm. in your life can be a really valuable thing to do. Mm-hmm.
I think on a specific example like that, I would say to somebody, don't quit. But I would say, if you can, if you really don't like your job, that's actually really good data, right? You don't like your job. You're basing that on a lot of experience. Go down, if you can, go to part-time, because they're going to need the time. It takes so much time to explore and build relationships, develop networks, do the volunteering. You know, it takes way more time than people realize. People come to me thinking, oh, great, I want to change my job. I'm going to be doing something completely different in 6 months' time. And I'm like, no. Adjust your expectations to about 18 months, maybe 2 years. Mm. You know, and it's very context specific. The mum who's a single mum that's got 3 kids who's working full time to look after those kids, she's got no time. She's got no discretionary time. The reality of her being able to make changes is very different to a completely different individual who's got lots of financial support, huge amounts of family support, and they're economically unemployed through choice, and they can explore options 5 days, 7 days a week, right? That person is going to make a change a hell of a lot quicker, because it does take an enormous amount of time.
Yeah. So when you look at organizations then, and how they are approaching this age group, if you could, first of all, just what would you advise they do? In order to be better at integrating people over 45, but also if you could wave your magic wand and just kind of fix the way that recruitment's done, what would you do?
Oh, gosh. Okay, so that's two big questions. Let's start with the first. So the first question you asked was, how would organizations integrate people over the age of 45 better? The first thing I would say is have programs that are targeting people over the age of 45. And I'm very much targeting this idea of integrating. Okay, so I'm assuming an organization currently doesn't have huge amounts of people over the age of 45, right? If you're recruiting lots of new people in, it does need to be cohort driven around age. Biggest thing that puts people off who are over the age of 45, 50 is joining a hiring scheme where they perceive that everyone's going to be 18, 21. So you need to have something that's a little bit more age targeted to actually integrate and bring in new people. If it's a different question, if we've got an organization that's already got people from the ages of 18 to 70, 80, right, what's the best way of getting those people who are perhaps have been neglected historically? Because let's be honest, once you're over the age of 45, very few organizations put a lot of money into your development. Then actually I could be really clear on that because we have done the research. So we asked more than 6,000 people over the age of 50 what they most want from their employer. Top of the list is they want time. They want time to figure out what it is that they want to do next. Second on the list is they want more opportunities to job shadow. So they're probably bored because they've done whatever role they've done for the last 8, 9, 10 years. So is it that they want to work in CSR, for example, logistics, HR, finance? In order for them to work in a different part of the organization, they need the psychological safety to be able to do that. So imagine a company that says, our organization is one that will allow you, after whatever period of time, to rotate through different departments. And we will figure out where it is that you want to land next based on the relationships you build, what you see, what you observe. That would be amazing.
It's almost like a grad scheme for this, because we've got it in the company I'm in house at the moment, and they do a year or so, going about 2 months in each department. Like, do the same for this cohort of people, this you know.
Yes,
that would
because
be amazing, right?
Exactly right. Because the reason grad schemes are so appealing is because when people are leaving university with their degree in sociology or finance or marketing or business or whatever it is, history, theology, right, they're not necessarily ready to go and become a consultant in PwC or an investment banker, right? They don't have the skills. They've never done it before. So the appeal of a grad scheme is, I have no idea what it is I'm going to do specifically in this organization. You're going to tell me what I need to know. You're going to give me the skills and you're going to introduce me to the people in the company, and I'm going to spend time. I'll end up where I end up. It could be corporate finance. It could be sales and trading. It could be IT. It could be research. Who knows? But I'm going to kind of go through the rotations. It's exactly the same, right? When you're in your 50s, when you're in your 60s, you ask people what their biggest problem is. The biggest problem is, I don't know what job it is I want to do next, right? Mm-hmm. They know what they've done. They know what they're bored of, but you don't know what you don't know. And jobs are constantly evolving. So even if you've got a concept of what HR is like, for example, HR in a small startup is a very different beast from HR in a huge, large bureaucratic government organization. So it's very, very different wherever it is that you go and where you land. So the only thing that helps you understand what's right for you is your experience of it.
That's just blowing my brain. Someone listen to this and take that and do it, please. Like, it's just so obvious. Like,
it's so obvious.
There's got to be a business there that can trial it, surely. Sorry, I'm shouting.
The sector where this is absolutely ripe is the NHS, because the NHS has got 100,000 vacancies it can't fill. Our own survey, we did a survey of about 800 of our members asking the specific question, would you consider working in the NHS? And over 50% of them would, because the NHS has got, you're doing everything, you know, you've got HR, you've got IT, as well as lobotomy, and not all of the roles are being a doctor, right? So many of the other roles. And the chance for them to recruit people who at this stage in life, where purpose is top of what it is that they want, you know, this kind of giving back, their ability to learn new things is not undiminished. at all in any way, shape or form. Their performance, empathy, emotional intelligence, I mean, you name it. They are literally there to tick every single box. Money, not their biggest driver. This is the audience the NHS should strategically be targeting. All of the values are lined up at that right stage in life, and yet there is no strategic approach to how they are recruiting this demographic, which is the biggest wasted opportunity I can imagine. Can I also revisit? Because you asked me two questions. You said, what would be the best thing for organisations to integrate people over 45? The next question you asked me was, if I had a magic wand, how would I like to see recruitment change? I think an interesting statistic that I want to kind of throw in the mix here is that there was a meta-analysis done in 2018 looking at pretty much every study that had looked at CVs and subsequent job performance. And what any recruitment method or assessment process is trying to do is you want to look at how someone has performed to date and predict whether or not that's going to have a relationship with how they're going to perform in the job in the future. Now, that relationship is called a correlation coefficient. And the correlation coefficient, if you were to sit here and rate a CV on a scale of 1 to 10, and then you were to look at their job performance again on a scale of 1 to 10, you know, 10 being the top performer, 10 being this is the best CV I've ever seen, perfect correlation would be plus 1. So the best CV means that person is the best performer in the job. The actual relationship between a CV and future job performance is 0.06, i.e. there is no relationship. So most recruiters and most recruitment processes are based on a system that fundamentally doesn't work. CVs tell you, they may have had a place for experienced hires maybe 40 years ago when people did that job for life, when we were in that job for life model, okay? In a scenario where people are looking potentially to make changes, people want to be assessed for their potential because actually I've got all these skills and I could apply them to lots of different jobs. CVs will screen them out every single time because you haven't got 2 years minimum experience in that role, right? So CVs don't tell you anything about someone's ability to learn. Doesn't tell you anything about their attitude, their experience in the workplace. Doesn't tell you whether or not they'll even get on with that person who's that particular hiring manager. So as I say, if I was to wave a magic wand, number one, I would bin the CV. If you were to ask me what to replace it with, even your basic things, and people are going to hate me for this, I'm going to get a lot of hate, even things like a basic cognitive test would do a better job. A personality questionnaire would do a better job. When people say to me, oh, I'm worried about AI interviewers, I'd say embrace it, because nothing is worse than a CV. So go for the AI, because actually the older you get, the more likely you're going to do better in that interview.
And imagine if you could just put your VR headset on and you could cue up the phlebotomist experience. You could actually just have it all there. Figure
Absolutely
out if you like
right.
it.
Yeah.
And then I don't know why.
If you look at the other end of the scale, one of the organizations that's come in and spoken to our members is the Wildlife Fund, World Wildlife Fund. And they say they never, ever have to advertise a role. Because actually, they've got so many people who want to work there. It's values driven, right? If that's the sort of thing you want to do, you're probably all over their website. You're looking at the career pages. Anytime there's a chance to volunteer, you're probably volunteering. So most of the time, all they have to do is recruit from their volunteer base. Because guess what? If you really want to work there, you are already making a decision for yourself that that's the right organization for you. And the volunteering has proven that to them that you're committed. Now, it's not the same, but if we almost kind of go back to that sort of a system, which is something that we had pre all this software, pre easy apply, all of this stuff, that in itself would be a better way.
Great. That. Well, Lucy, if people want to find out more about you and Brave Starts, where do they go? Where do they look?
Just come to our website. So it's bravestarts.com, and there's lots of information in there about what you get, what to expect, the other sorts of members that you'll meet. There's a lot available.
Brilliant. And thank you so much for your stats loaded epic conversation. We love it.
Thanks so
You're
much.
Welcome.
Thank you.
All right. Take care, guys.